We are back on the Bengals Beat podcast. Lindsey Patterson, Charlie Goldsmith, Tyler Dragon. How you guys doing?
Doing good. It was good to have Bengals Jim on the podcast today. He made a compelling case for more Bengals in the Hall of Fame. So it was good to have Bengals Jim on.
And in my first track and field meet that I watched as a fan, Tyler led me in the right direction with who to root for. So thank you, Tyler. And my track fan experience is off to a good start.
The Olympic trials aren't over. This is the final weekend of the track and field Olympic trials. There's going to be a lot of good events. So if you're a casual fan, if you're a real avid track fan, definitely recommend watching track and field Olympic trials this weekend. It's going to be good. And if you want to read some, I have some track and field articles at usatoday.com.
The Steelers made news because they released offensive guard, six-time Pro Bowler, David DeCastro. And I know everyone wants to point to injuries, and we talk about the Bengals offensive line and bringing some new bodies in for camp. Do you think the Cincinnati Bengals should bring DeCastro on?
They're not going to bring him in. I'll just put that out there right now. I'm not going to give any Bengals fans any false hope. I'm not going to leave on. They're not going to bring him in. The Bengals, like the way that they are with their offensive line, there's going to be an intriguing camp competition at guard between Jackson Carmen, Quinn Spain, Xavier Suafilo, Michael Jordan. Those are, you know, the top candidates to start at left and right guard. So I know the guard spot was a position of weakness last year due to overall talent and injuries. But overall, the Bengals, they're not going to bring him in. One, because of injuries. He's also contemplating retirement. And the Bengals, you know, want to see, you know, how their guards perform training camp. And they tinker with the position this offseason, primarily when they brought in Jackson Carmen through the draft.
You know, I think any potential lack of interest with David DeCastro has more to do with DeCastro himself and where he is at in his career compared to the fact that he might be the best offensive guard available. If it was someone else, maybe, but kind of look at what's going on here. What the Steelers just did is they basically cut DeCastro and signed Trey Turner. Trey Turner is an offensive guard who has his own injury concerns and has been on the free agent market all year. If the Steelers decided Turner was the direction they could have wanted to go in over DeCastro, that might show how DeCastro is viewed around the league. And the reason that could be the case is injuries. There were reports of a non-football injury that was leading to concerns about DeCastro's health heading into the 2021 season. So with all of those factors, for someone who has questions about his ability to hold up over an entire season, even though DeCastro has been legitimately one of the best offensive guards over the last decade, where the league views him now isn't in line with where his reputation has been. Not even close.
And I said we've been talking about the Bengals offensive line for so long. I think when you look at the AFC North, and if you were to rank where the current offensive line positions are, I'm not saying the Bengals is great. It did upgrade at tackle, and when you look at the guard position, and to be determined what Jackson Carmen can do. But I think if you were to look at the offensive lines in the AFC North, that would make the Steelers having the worst going into 2021.
I mean, you can make an argument that they have the worst offensive line going into the season. It all is dependent on, you know, how their rookies perform. I know they drafted some offensive linemen in the draft, so they definitely don't have the best. I think the Ravens and the Cleveland Browns are competing with the best offensive lines, and not only the AFC North, but all of football. Probably Cleveland. I will put Cleveland number one, and then I would put Baltimore number two. And as of now, I would put the Bengals number three, and then the Steelers, you know, coming up last, number four with the offensive line. They definitely have some work to do. It's going to be interesting to see how their rookies and young offensive linemen develop Same goes for the Bengals as well. The Bengals offensive line has been much maligned for the past few years, pretty much several years, let me say that. And Trey Hopkins is coming off of injury. He's ahead of schedule from what I am hearing. It's going to be interesting to see how Jonah Williams develops, continues to develop at left tackle. Obviously, they signed Riley Reiff. He's an upgrade over Bobby Hart at right tackle. And then, as I said before, their guard position, that's going to be one of the most intriguing camp battles. It's Jackson Carmen going to start in year one. Bengals signed Xavier Suofilo to a three-year deal last year. Is he still going to be a starter? Or Quinn Spain, who the Bengals signed, re-signed this offseason to a pretty much a prove-it deal. He's motivated to prove that he's a starting caliber offensive lineman and he can be in Cincinnati for, you know, long haul, and he wants a multi-year deal. So the Bengals offensive line, they have some work to do as well. And they know that all eyes are going to be watching them because it's Joe Burrow's back there, the franchise quarterback that everybody wants to protect. So the offensive line, there's going to be a microscope on them to see how they not only protect Joe Burrow, but also just how they improve and develop over the course of the season.
I do want to go back to the Steelers and revisit one of the most interesting arguments I think we've had on this podcast. On draft night, Tyler called Najee Harris one of the best picks of the first round, and Lindsay and I called him one of the worst picks of the first round. The Steelers used a first-round pick on a running back over an offensive lineman, and look at where that Steelers offensive line stands now. We mentioned Trey Turner obviously has injury concerns. They only have one other player on that line who's even a starter for them last season, and it's Okorafor, their left tackle, who, you know, I wouldn't put in the same category even close to Jonah Williams. The Steelers' offensive line by far now is the worst in the division, and the Steelers were almost apathetic in improving that on draft night. You don't solve an offense with a running back. You solve it by creating time, creating lanes in the pass game and the run game up front. The Steelers have ignored that this season more so than the Bengals. And as a result, you know, with another ripple effect now with the Castro being gone, is another sign to why the Steelers offense, after struggling down the stretch last season, probably will be even worse in 2021.
So I can't be, this is not, I'm not going to bash the Steelers so much. I mean, they did draft two offensive linemen. So it's not like they totally ignored it. And, I mean, Trey Turner, yes, he has some injury history. He is a multi-time Pro Bowler, though. So, I mean, I'm not going to just like I'm not going to rule out the Bengals offensive line being improved. I can't say the Steelers offensive line is just completely awful. It's all dependent on, you know, how players like Kendrick Green develop. They're going to probably start. They have a young group. But I do think Najee Harris, I'll stand by that. That was a good pick for the Steelers because, in my opinion, he's the best running back in the draft. And don't have a lot of running backs who can, you know, elevate your team. Yes, there needs to be a solid offensive line for running backs to be able to, you know, contribute and perform well, a la Joe Mixon running behind the Bengals offensive line. But that pick, I think it's going to surprise some people. I've watched Najee Harris since his high school days. He's actually from the Bay Area, like Joe Mixon. He was the number one recruit coming out of high school for a running back and did well at Alabama. I think he's going to do well in Pittsburgh, and I like the pick.
So if you're not going to bash the Steelers offensive line, I will bash. You mentioned, you know, that I just disagree. They invest, you say they invested in rookies. You know, we're heading into training camp even with questions about Jackson Carmen and saying it's good the Bengals have an insurance blanket with Xavier Suofilo. They're counting on Kendrick Green, a prospect who had tools, but a lot of questions, and you know, he went lower than I personally expected because of some of those questions heading into the draft. He is now moving positions to center, and their fourth round pick, Dan Moore, is a backup tackle who wasn't even on my radar personally as one of the better options, even at that range, based off the offensive lineman I studied. The Bengals invested more in their offensive line, even in the draft, than the Steelers did. The Steelers left themselves with a ton of question marks, were caught up probably more than any other team in the AFC by the whole cap situation. And now their offensive line is a mess in 2021. Like, who could you even like on that offensive line?
I just wouldn't call it a mess. I think just because you haven't seen the young players perform doesn't mean they're a mess. I want to see them on the field and see how they gel, just like the Bengals offensive line and just like all the young players. They deserve a chance to prove themselves before you just call them a mess. And I do that with every team in the NFL. Show me that you're good. Show me that you can perform before I bash you. I'm not going to bash you from the start. You have to show me that you're terrible. And we haven't seen this Steelers offensive line. Nobody has seen the Steelers offensive line as currently constructed, how they are on paper. So I'm not going to bash you. I'm not going to bash the Bengals or any team because they haven't shown me any evidence to bash them.
Nobody's seen any of them play. No one's seen. So nobody's seen any of them play because they haven't been starters in the NFL.
Yeah, exactly.
I have to say this. Nobody likes to tell you that someone is a former Pro Bowler than Tyler Dragon when he talks about Trey Turner or Odell Beckham. Like, you love bringing up former Pro Bowlers. He has not been that great. Why do you think Turner was available for so long?
Why do I think Turner was available for so long?
Yeah, why do you think he has not signed with the team yet?
So what I was hearing is he wanted Pro Bowl-type money. And he wanted a multi-year deal that was going to put him in the upper echelon of guards.
Me too, Tyler. So do I.
You said what?
Me too. I also would like
to. But that. Charlie, you never play football, so hold on. That's what, you know, my sources told me that Trey Turner wanted, and that's why he stayed on the market for so long. And, you know, Odell, what I'm hearing from the Browns, Odell Beckham is showing Odell Beckham signs of old. So,
how many games has he played since his rehab?
I want to see how these players perform. And I know that Odell Beckham's been injury prone. I know that Trey Turner's battled injuries, but this is a new year, just like the Bengals. We can't go say, oh, well, he's battle injuries, Trey Turner's battle injuries, Odell Beckham's battle injuries, but then not bring up the fact that the Bengals' best player in offense is coming off a knee. Like, I'm just being objective. Like, and I know that a lot of Bengals fans, they want to say, well, yeah, these players are injured, but the Bengals are coming off injuries too. You have to be objective. The Joe Burrow's coming off a significant injury. So if these players have injury concerns, you have to then go and say, okay, well, the Bengals have injury concerns. The Bengals center is coming off a significant injury. The Bengals starting cornerback is coming off of injury. So there are injuries all over the place. So I just want to be able to see how these players bounce back and how these players gel. Every single year, obviously, is an entire new year. So I'm going to be objective across the board, and I'm not going to just say, oh, point at this team and not say, oh, well, the Bengals are just totally absolved and they're immune from all this.
I would say this. I'm not saying the Bengals offensive line is fixed or it's great or anything like that. We'll see what happens this season, but I think it's okay to compare them to one of the worst offensive lines in the league, and that is the Pittsburgh Steelers. And if people want to criticize with the Bengals, them waiting to some would say address the offensive line, but the Steelers didn't even get help with the offensive line with the first pick or the second pick. And I think that's easy to criticize that move. If you're looking at the overall picture in the NFL right now, I'm using the Steelers offensive line as comparison to say they are one of the worst in the NFL. And I think it's worse than the Bengals.
And yeah, does look that way. Yeah. I'm just saying that we should give every single team, especially teams that have young players, we should at least let them prove themselves. And that's all I'm saying. And I would say that for everybody, not just the Steelers. I would say that for the Bengals, all 32 NFL teams. If there are young offensive line, the Bengals, they have an offensive line that on paper, if they gel, they could be much improved. I know Pro Football Focus said they were top five most improved offensive lines. On paper, they should be much improved. And the addition of Frank Pollock as offensive line coach, that certainly helps. But I'm always of the fact that you got to prove it on the field. There's a lot of talk, but I like backing it up on the field. And again, that's why I like former Pro Bowlers. I've seen Odell Beckham back it up on the field.
How long ago was that?
The Bengals, how many, and this is not bashing the Bengals either. How many former Pro Bowl wide receivers do they have?
I just want to know the last time that
Odell asked, if you, in, if I asked every single NFL writer across the United States, who would you rather have? Odell Beckham, Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, or Ja'Marr Chase for one season? Most of them would pick Odell Beckham. I know that for a fact.
Off an injury? No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
No. Yes. Hey, Lindsay, I promise you they would.
Okay.
I think that one of the Bengals wide receivers has a better year than Odell Beckham. And I think the Bengals second best wide receiver will have more receiving yards than Jarvis Landry this season. I do think that.
All right. Let's do a dinner bet.
I'm here for a dinner bet. All right, Jeff.
Now again, the Bengals will throw a whole lot more. So that's a skewed kind of, you know, take, because the Browns offense is a lot more balanced than the Bengals. They're going to hand the ball off to their two stud running backs. The Bengals don't really like handing the ball off to Joe Mixon too much. So I can see if, you know, T. Higgins or Tyler Boyd or even Ja'Marr Chase has more receiving yards than Odell Beckham or Jarvis Landry. However, I am almost certain that if I went to a poll with all NFL writers, most of them for next season would rather have Odell Beckham coming off an injury.
Great. I'm going to put this out on social media and we'll see what happens.
But then you have Bengals fans, of course.
You know what? There is a little bias in my followers. I'm not going to lie. But I don't agree. I just don't agree with that. And I'm being completely honest. Until I see Odell Beckham play football again the way he once did, then I'll put that. I think the Browns offense was better without him last year. And that's not a hot take. Bam.
Okay.
All right, let's get to the questions, you guys. We have a great interview with Jim Foster. I can't wait to get to that Jungle to the Hall. He's doing great work. And make sure you check him out over on Twitter, Bengals Gems. And Tyler, we can't end a podcast without your questions of the week. We are going to add fan questions into the next podcast. I apologize. We will have them coming up. So we'll get to those and you can send them over on social media. We'll ask for those. But Tyler, go ahead and get to your questions.
Wasn't one of the fan questions dealing with wide receivers? I don't remember it.
It was, and we are adding that to next week's because it'll be continued to our wide receiver conversation, because you know what right now is the dead period between we'll get to all of the rankings and all of the predictions and all that fun stuff over the next couple weeks between now and training camp. And I do want to add his question and other Bengals fans questions into the next pod on the Bengals Beat podcast. We will have that edition, but Tyler, I know you probably have a question to wrap this up. Go ahead and shoot it to us, man.
So there are a couple questions that I have. Obviously, you guys know I'm covering the track and field Olympic trials. It's in Eugene, Oregon. The state of Oregon does not have an NFL team. Portland is about an hour, I think 45 minutes from Eugene. And Portland often gets mentioned as a possible NFL city in the future. So my question this week is, which U.S. city would you like to see add an NFL team that doesn't already have one, by the way?
It's funny. My first, you know what? I think if the NFL goes to a new city, it's not going to be a city in the United States. So the way you phrase that question is interesting. which U.S. city. I think the NFL is really lacking kind of like the Southeast area as well. I think there's opportunity there, you know, some just someplace in SEC country. It's hard to pinpoint that right city, but, you know, obviously you have the Saints, but another football market in that region, I think, could be a good fit.
That's a really great question. Tyler, I want to hear yours first.
Well, mine will be, and Lindsay, you cannot steal it.
I'm not. I won't steal it.
Mine will be the city that just lost an NFL team, Oakland. I think Oakland deserves a football team. It's unfortunate that, you know, they couldn't get the stadium rights figured out between, you know, the city and the team. But I think Oakland deserves a football team. It still feels weird to me saying the Las Vegas Raiders. I think, you know, Oakland and the Raiders are synonymous. But I think that Oakland deserves a football team for sure.
I don't even know if the city deserves one, but I'd like to see it. I think obviously they've added Major League Soccer, and some would say, you know, they should have a Major League Baseball team.
Okay.
Austin, Texas. I love that city. Add one in there. Like I said, they have a Major League Soccer team. Put it in there. Put it in Texas. Texas is big. They can survive with another NFL team in it. And I don't even like my answer, but I'm really just like losing my train of thought of who I would pick and what city, where I'd pick a city.
Okay. Lindsay.
It was an easy question. It's my fault.
Okay. So two more questions. Well, one more, and then we're going to wrap up with another Reds update from Charlie. My second question, of course, I cannot end this podcast without an NBA question. The Final Four, they're playing the Bucks, Hawks, Clippers, Suns. I need guys' NBA Finals prediction. Who's going to represent the West and who's going to represent the East?
I picked the Bucks to win the finals at the start of the playoffs, sticking with the Bucks to beat the Hawks in six. Coming out of the West, I'm going to take the Phoenix Suns in five. Then I'll have the Bucks beating the Suns in six.
I will just say this. I will have my winner. I'll take the Bucks. That's all I got. I don't have any NBA in reports right here. Sorry.
You've been watching a lot of hockey.
I'm a new hockey fan right now. New York Islanders, baby. I joined the fandom about 8 days ago. This is going to be my new team. I have a game 7 tonight. Well, I'll be at the Reds game and I'll be keeping up on that. It looks fun. I'm all aboard. I don't know why it took me so long to enjoy hockey. I'm going to get to a Columbus Blue Jackets game soon. I'm all in. And they're probably going to break my heart in game 7 of being a fan for 8-9 days right now.
Hi, Charlie. Give us your update on the Cincinnati Reds.
I'll just keep it really short. They've been as good as any team except the Giants in the entire National League since the start of June. Jonathan India is one of the most exciting rookies in baseball, and Castellanos and Winker are still playing at an all-star level.
Make sure you check it out, Cincinnati.com. What else is up there, fellas?
So aside from all my track content, I have a story on Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow, how their chemistry is still there and how they are picking up where they left off at LSU.
We are back on the Bengals Beat podcast. Lindsay Patterson, Tyler Dragon, Charlie Goldsmith, and our guy, some would call him Bengal Jim. He's also known as Jim Foster. Jim, how you doing?
Great. Beautiful Friday morning here.
It is. And you know what? When I was thinking about your intro and how to introduce you, it's silly because I think any Bengals fans who are listening to the Bengals Beat podcast know you. You have your own stuff going on. But just explain a little bit about your background and obviously how long you've been a Cincinnati Bengals fan.
Ah, geez, well, Pete, I won't take too long. And it's just been a Bengals fan since I've been about 10 years old. The first game I ever watched was that first game in the 81 season against the Seahawks when they were down 21-0 and came back in the second half when they benched Ken Anderson and put Turk Schonert in to come back and win that game. And Ken Anderson goes on to win the MVP that year. But that was my first memory as a kid watching that game and that entire season. And I've been a diehard follower ever since.
Jim, I just want to compliment you. My backdrop is a gray wall, and your backdrop is retro Bengals photos, retro Bengals banners. I see a helmet. I think I see a Bengal tiger. So just full compliment there.
No, thanks, buddy. Yeah, this is my Bengals museum down here. So
Bengals museum. So Jim, tell give us your all-time five favorite Bengals players, if you can.
All-time five, not in any particular order, okay?
Not in any particular order.
So obviously Ken Anderson, childhood, you know, guy there. That's my one of my favorite players there. Ken Anderson, Ken Riley, James Brooks was just an absolute stud. I loved Corey Dillon. That was my guy. Love CD. Fifth one, man. This is a tough one here. You know, I'd probably go old school again with Iceman, Isaac Curtis, as those are my top five right there. I could do a top 20 list pretty quickly as well, but those are my top five probably.
Hey, I know you can do a top 20 list. Okay, now give me maybe your five best moments as a Bengals fan. I know I'm asking you questions off the cuff, but I want to know.
It's all good, man. I guess, you know, some of these moments are just memories for me and my kids and my family. I just, you know, I just remember that 81 Super Bowl, sitting there as a 10-year-old crying my eyes out when they were losing, when they lost that game. That was a memory that I have. Those are my first sad memories, basically, as a Bengals fan. But I guess, you know, I don't know, top five. Geez, that is tough, Tyler. I'll tell you, you know, I remember the dreaded Pittsburgh playoff game a few years back, right? When I had the entire family there, all four of my kids. I'm not going to talk about the ending, but that moment when we thought we had that game won and tears are coming out of our eyes. I got all my kids there. That was a great moment at that point in time. You know, a few seconds later, all things went to pot there, but I'm not giving you a top five here. I'm just kind of randomly giving you things, I guess, but that was okay. A great moment, you know, and just, you know, the moments, just spending time with friends and families, that games and tailgates, that, I mean, that's just, I don't know if I could pick out of that bunch, but you know, just, without football, guys, you know, I would tell you 2/3 of my relationships, even through my business work as well, 2/3 of my relationship are because of Bengals football, whether it be through tailgating, just meeting friends and family, people tailgating at games, out of town, out of the country. Without Bengal football, I don't have those relationships. And this is what I love about NFL and Cincinnati Bengals football are those relationships that we've built over the years that we would have never met any other way without Bengals football, including us here on on the show today.
You talk about relationships, and I think one of the things we're really trying to, I think the Bengals are trying to do, is connect the fan base. You see it on social media. I know Elizabeth Blackburn has been making her appearances on different social media platforms, different Bengals shows, and really trying to make that connection. What do you see from the Bengals right now, and how do you like that as someone who's been a loyal season ticket holder for so long?
Yeah, I think there's been a complete culture shift. It's been going on for quite a while now down there, with Troy and Katie having more of a role, and now Elizabeth having more of a role. I'll tell you, it's a dramatic change from the old school guys that were there in the 90s, right? Went through that hard decade of the 90s. If we would have projected what's happening the last 2 or 3 years and even 4 years in this organization, we never would have saw that coming, right? It's refreshing. It's fun. It's positive. The vibe is just great to hear and listen to Elizabeth Blackburn speak, period. The energy that she just gives off is just so fun. And it's exciting for the fan base, whether no matter where you're at in your Bengal fandom, if you're new in the Bengal fandom, if you've been around for a while, it is refreshing. And I'll tell you, I think it's unique in the NFL right now. I mean, we seem to be on the cutting edge of social media with the Bengals social media team, all the things that they're doing so well, all the things that they're implementing, the history that they're tying into everything they're doing today. Absolutely. I don't know one fan, Lindsay, that is seeing and hearing what's going on and has anything negative to say about what's going on here. So it's been awesome to see.
What does the Ring of Honor project mean to you, and how does that also help with what you're doing with the Bengals and the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, so, you know, just the history that they're tying. I know they've been working on that Ring of Honor for quite a few years now, and just being able to get to roll that out is, you know, I think there's been maybe over there's maybe they haven't done the best of jobs tying history into what they're doing. And they have totally shifted gears on that over the past few years. And it seems like everything they're doing now is tying their just great history into everything they're doing today. And that Ring of Honor, it's just such a cool thing they're doing, and we're excited about that. Every fan's excited about that. That Thursday night game against Jacksonville, when they roll that Ring of Honor out, announce the next two, you know, hopefully Ken Anderson and Ken Riley on top of Paul Brown and Anthony Munoz. But the Ring of Honor is just a great thing, and that's going to be fun for the next so many years, because they're going to do a couple players each and every year now moving forward. So that's going to be an ongoing thing, you know, with that Ring of Honor. And really tying into what we've done as a fan base, you know, how do we supplement what Jeff Hobson and the Cincinnati Bengals have been working really hard on over the years, and kind of really pushing these deserving, some of our legends that should be in the Hall of Fame, you know, just supplementing what they're doing with what we did up in the Jungle to the Hall event, making sure we're communicating statistically and analytics to these senior voters. Everything they're doing with the Ring of Honor ties in everything, because I think you've heard that on a national level. Why should the National Football League recognize any of the Bengal legends in the Hall of Fame if the Bengals aren't recognizing their own? I don't agree with that, but you hear that on a national level. So I think everything they're doing with this Ring of Honor is a really good thing. And I think it's going to help even more Bengal legends get into the Hall of Fame. It's a piece of what needs to happen, I think.
I think a fun person to talk about first is, obviously there's the two Kens, Ken Anderson, Ken Riley, but Willie Anderson, just from following what you were putting out on social media, was a big part of the weekend and the discussion you were having. Can you share, I guess, some of that conversation and part of Willie's Hall of Fame case?
Oh, man. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff around Willie Anderson. I don't have those statistics in front of me here, but I think he had a 3-year stretch where he didn't allow a sack. He had 15 sacks in 13 years he gave up. This guy was a dominating force, maybe the best right tackle of his generation, period, of the current generation of right tackles. I think he played against 15 or so Hall of Fame defensive ends and only gave up one sack to one of those defensive ends. And I think that was in the last minute of a game that the Bengals were down big time. So Willie Anderson is absolute Hall of Famer, no doubt. And you know, you saw the video that we were able to get from Michael Strahan. And when Willie was up at the Jungle to the Hall event, guys, I'm telling you, I had seen these videos the night before. Michael Strahan's video came in pretty late. We were concerned not getting that video. So Michael called, said, "Is it too late?" Got us the video. And then Joe Goodberry on Twitter did a really nice piece for us that we worked with him on. And I wanted to send them to Willie. I said, "Willie, I don't want to send these to you. Are you okay not seeing these before the event tomorrow?" He said, "Dad, just surprise me with them." So as we're playing those videos, guys, and it was really the Joe Goodberry video that really got him moving, because I didn't watch. We had a screen up there, and we had about 200-plus Bengal fans, and Willie Anderson and some of his friends were up there. And I wasn't watching the video. I literally was watching Willie's reaction the whole time. I was the only one not focused on the video board that we had. And Willie lost it, man. And I know there's a picture that was taken that is all over social media about you seeing him wiping his eyes. Guys, that was a special moment for everybody up there to see how emotional Willie got with that video from Joe Goodberry and Michael Strahan. Guys, it means so much to these guys. And, you know, in the data and analytics and things that are coming out now that Willie had never heard about, just gets him more excited about it. But the raw emotion that we got to see from Willie that day was something special for everybody that was there at that event, that's for sure.
So I know you identified 8 guys who are, in your eyes, but deserving of fame on the Bengals side. Give us those 8 Bengals so our fans know. And is you mentioned Willie, you mentioned the two Kens as, you know, in your opinion, surefire Hall of Famers. Are there any other of the 8 that you believe are surefire, absolute Hall of Famers?
Well, I think we have some guys that are borderline, Tyler, you know, that I think they're a strong case could be made, but it'd be tough to get them in. And I'll start with those two. I think Chad Johnson and Corey Dillon have a legitimate chance and an opportunity if you know, of getting into the Hall of Fame. Those are the two, I would say, out of the 8, if we go 8-1, those would probably be 7 and 8. But I truly think Trey Johnson and Corey Dillon would be on that list. And then we have some players that maybe a lot of current Bengal fans don't know about, right? So Lamar Parrish was an absolute stud in the 70s. He was the Deion Sanders before Deion Sanders. This guy was an amazing, amazing special teams kickoff returner, a defensive back. I think he was defensive or corner DB of the year when he went to the Washington Redskins as well. But this guy was an absolute stud. He is a very strong case for the Hall of Fame. I think you have Max Montoya, maybe one of the greatest guards to ever play NFL, has a very strong case to get in there as well. Isaac Curtis, you know, he was a game changer. When the NFL changes the rules because you're so damn good, that's a special person right there. Isaac Curtis has a legitimate opportunity to get in. If Drew Pearson made it in last year, if you put their statistics next to each other, they're almost identical. Drew played for Dallas Cowboys. Isaac played for the Cincinnati Bengals. So we're talking big market, small market comparison there. And then you got Willie Anderson, Ken Riley, and Ken Anderson. Unfortunately, the way the Hall of Fame has things set up is there's only one senior player going in this year. There's a bottleneck of these senior players, these OGs is what we call them. There's a bottleneck of these guys that can't get in, that should be in there. And I think there's going to be some changes over the next few years, hopefully, on opening up that bottleneck a little bit and letting some more of these guys in. These guys are all very well deserving.
I went back to the jungle of the hall a little bit. When you were making this you saw it all over social media, and I think fans really started to interact with it. Obviously, you saw pictures and videos from it from last weekend. But when you started to talk to some of the former Hall of Famers or the Hall of Famers in the NFL right now who were rivals of the Cincinnati Bengals during that time, what was that like when you were having conversations with them and just kind of that experience and a little surprised with what they were able to say?
Yeah, it's interesting. So one of the things we found as we dug through this process over the last few years, and more specifically the last 6 to 8 months, as we kind of kicked it into gear on this, there doesn't seem to be any criteria, you know, from the Hall of Fame. It's just you have 9 senior voters that will be getting their ballots here sometime early July to recommend their one senior that they're going to recommend going into the Hall of Fame. All these 9 guys are trying to do the right things, but they have their own mindset on what their criteria is. So one of the things that we got pretty consistent, because we verbally had conversations with 3 of these 9 senior voters, and they were real big about, hey, not just getting your own teammates to talk about you and some other players, but specifically, if you can get somebody on the other side of the ball that player played against, and them being a Hall of Famer, that carries a lot of weight to them. So that's when we went out of our way to start gathering these videos. Like, okay, if this is important to them, let's give it to them at the end of the day. So Michael Strahan has come out before in writing and has talked about Willie Anderson. But we didn't have a ton of detailed conversations with the guys, Lindsay. We were just asking for help on some of these things. But Michael Strahan is a huge Willie supporter. He was very passionate. And if you see the videos we got from James Lofton about Ken Riley, Mel Blunt about Ken Riley, Michael Strahan about Willie Anderson, and then even the videos we were able to get from Chris Collinsworth and Munoz about Ken Anderson, guys, there's passion around this in their conversations about the why behind these guys being in the Hall of Fame. And when you get a Hall of Famer talking about these guys, the senior voters are listening.
I think that one of the things that obviously you've been around this team for a really long time, and it's hard to deny. Some would call it a Joe Burrow factor. What have you noticed over the last year and a half since they've drafted Joe Burrow and in the fan base and everything around Cincinnati sports?
Yeah, it's interesting, Lindsay, because I think it's a combination of a lot of things. I think the culture shift that you're seeing in the front office, even from a social media perspective, has generated excitement. But I think the number one overriding factor, you just hit it right on the nose. There is absolutely a Joe Burrow effect, not just from the fan base, but the energy within the organization, the energy within, you know, his own teammates. You get 100% participation in the camps and OTAs. This guy is just exudes confidence and leadership and positivity that I think everybody that's around this team, whether it be players, the front office, or the fan base itself, this is the right guy at the right time for this city, because we've not had a great stretch here, Lindsay, for the past 5 years, right? I don't think I have ever seen this much excitement and energy around a team in my life since I've been a fan. And that's saying a lot. We've had 2 Super Bowl teams. We had this playoff stretch runs that we've had. But I don't ever remember feeling this excited, the fan base this excited and confident going into a season. It really does start with Joe Burrow, period.
And you have a lot going on right now. Like I said, one of the coolest things that I'm seeing from the Cincinnati fan base is YouTube channels, podcasts, a lot going on from you guys. Share with fans where they can find you over on social media and the shows you have going on.
Yeah. So just, this social media thing is kind of taken off. We have a show every Sunday night called Talking Football with Bengal Jim and Friends. And we just did this in COVID when we were heading to Vegas for the draft and we got shut down. We couldn't go to Vegas, right? And we decided to do a draft show that night on YouTube. We had like 1,800 live viewers that night. We're like, what? We just continue doing those shows. We've had a lot of former players on, front office people. Lindsay, we've had you on. It's just been a fun avenue for Bengals in the offseason. How do they get their fix for the Cincinnati Bengals? And it's shows like that, not just our show. There's all kinds of Bengal fans doing fun things out there. The more the merrier. And it's a lot of fun right now on social media. But our Twitter account's been a lot of fun interacting with local Bengal fans across the country and across the world. But that Bengals Twitter's been fun. It's that Twitter is at Bengal Gyms with an S. _ BTR is before the roar. That's basically our tailgate at the end of the day. But in the YouTube channel is just Bengal Gyms before the roar tailgate experience. We're on Facebook as well, on Instagram. But the YouTube thing has been a lot of fun. And it wasn't purposely done this way, but it's become more of our niche has been educating a lot of younger Bengal fans on all of our Bengal greats that we've had over the years. So we've had a lot of players on from the 70s, the 80s, the 90s that – you know, folks like me are going to remember them, you know, like it was yesterday. But with the feedback that we get because of that has been unbelievable, because people didn't know some of these guys, and maybe they knew their names, but they didn't know how good these guys were. And to hear their stories and sharing some of the stories about Paul Brown and some of the history has hit a chord with the Bengal fan base. So that's why we keep doing it. It's been a lot of fun, doing the show. That's for sure.
When these guys get in the Hall of Fame, they will have Jim Foster to thank for that. You've done a great job, and I look forward to your continued success off the field and watching what you're doing over on social media with other fans.
Yeah, we love you guys. You guys do an awesome job, too. It's you guys are the 1A show at top of the pyramid. We're always keeping up with you guys, keeping us informed on things. Thank you guys very much.
Okay. So before you get out of here, Jim, I got one question for you, though. I'm going to put you on the spot right now. So,
okay.
Oh, I hope you're ready. So I know you talked to some senior Hall of Fame voters and some, you know, Hall of Fame voters in general. And, you know, you've done an excellent job being a Bengals fan, and a lot of Bengals follow your work. A lot of senior voters that I interviewed, you know, and I asked them flat out, why aren't there more Bengals in the Hall of Fame? Why is it just Anthony Munoz? And the three main reasons they gave me are because the Bengals are in a small market, they have not won any Super Bowls, and the lack of all-decade players. Those are the three reasons why. So if you were in the room during those discussions and they were voting, give us your best rebuttal to those claims.
Yeah, so to that, Tyler, specifically, is this is not about small market and large market. I think you're right. We're hearing that pretty consistently across those voters. There are tons of players that haven't won a Super Bowl. There's quite a few quarterbacks that haven't won a Super Bowl that are in the Hall of Fame. It really needs, you know, the comparisons that they need to make, that they need to stay focused on, is the Ken Anderson and Ken Riley's of the world. If we're talking about those two specifically, compare them to players of their era, period. It's not about a team accomplishment. The Hall of Fame is an individual accomplishment. And when you look at Ken Riley, number 4, when he retired on the interception leader list, he has more interceptions than 29 defensive backs in the NFL Hall of Fame. Even today, he is number 5 on that interception leader, NFL interception leaders in the NFL Hall of Fame. Out of the top 8 interception leaders on that list, he's number 5. All 7 of those guys are in except for Ken Riley. They need to look at and compare the players in their era, take the small market, take their bias out of the decision-making process. And really, that's it at the end of the day. If they make those comparisons to players during their generation, during that era, Ken Anderson and Ken Riley are absolutely in there. I mean, it's absolutely mind-boggling. I do feel, guys, Tyler, to answer your question too, I feel pretty confident Ken Riley gets in this year. You know, I think we had Ira Kaufman on from Tampa Bay, who's a writer down in Tampa, who came on our show maybe about a month ago. And the first thing he said to us, what I thought was very interesting, guys, he says, guys, I got to give it up. We had questions ready to go. We're not professional interviewers like you guys, right? But we had questions ready to go for him. And he stopped us before we could even get going. He goes, hey, guys, I got to give Bengal Nation a shout out. He goes, over the past 6 to 8 months on social media, I'm hearing and seeing more about Ken Riley, Ken Anderson, Willie Anderson, Isaac Curtis than I have ever heard in my life. It's great things like Joe Goodberry are doing, statistics. You know, they didn't have Pro Football Focus back in these times when Willie Anderson played and grading offensive linemen. When you have one of the senior voters making a comment like that, that's powerful what Bengal Nation, Bengal fans are doing right now to be a positive impact on what's going on through this. And I know I wanted to bring up something else from Ira, but, you know, Ira also made the comment, you know, they can't come out and tell us specifically what's said in that room. That's against their protocol, their policies and procedures. But when he made the comment to us that Ken Riley has one hand on the football in the Hall of Fame, I think that's a powerful statement when he said that. We were pretty confident Ken Riley was getting into the Hall of Fame last year. And I think that's when Drew Pearson came out and kind of had a national campaign crying on national TV and people getting behind. I think that might've changed one vote, because I think Ken Riley missed by one vote. So I just think it's important that these guys compare, take out any national bias about this, compare that individual player, what he did with others in his era. And Ken Anderson, Ken Riley are absolute no-brainers, in my opinion.
Jim Foster.
Compelling case.
Yeah, he is. You can find him over on social media, Bengals Gems, and also make sure you plug that YouTube channel again for everybody to check out.
Yes, Bengal Gems, Before the Royal Tailgate Experience, talking football with Bengal Jim and friends every Sunday night. So we have a great time with it.
You are the best. Thank you for taking some time, and we'll see you at Paul Brown Stadium this fall.
Thanks, guys. Good talking to you.